We are reconvening, and unfortunately, fiscal staff is busy in dealing with the ag bill. So what we are going to do, because that would be our natural next step, is instead start with the public testimony. And I saw Commissioner Holston here, and so he's here. Let's start with him, and we will welcome you to the committee.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Mark Holston, Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Madam Chair, members, I was kind of counting on the next hour to actually prepare a little bit more.
I think it's probably best that we have you right now.
I appreciate it. I do appreciate it, and we will be around this weekend to help you and the committee as you process through under these timelines that we're hearing about out in the hallways about how this conference committee is going to process through and answer some of your process through over the next couple of days, and we'll be around to answer your questions the next couple of the days and help you negotiate through the differences and put together a package that will service Minnesota and the environment in general. Members, just a few minutes in your packet, or you do have a budget document that was assembled predominantly for the House, or as the session went through, called Budgeting for Results. It points out on the first page, just to touch on it quickly, the principles for who we are as the agency, and we went through this in our budget discussions early in the year, but it lays out our mission as the Department of Natural Resources and the balances that we are forced through our mission to, or how we manage our natural resources, both for the economic development of our natural resources, for the recreational use of our natural resources, and the protection. Many of the times when you hear about conflict with the DNR, or you have conflict with the DNR, it's in many times because we come at it from one of those specific values. That's what we tend to hear in large part. Why aren't you doing it this way? Well, the problem is, in many cases, is we're trying to balance it through our mission of economic development, recreation, and protection. We are also, as an agency, looking much more aggressively, as you are, talking about outcomes and budgeting for outcomes. We are looking at long term. Where are we as an agency, and what are the things that are affecting us as an agency in meeting those natural resources concerns and the public's concerns for natural resources management? And so we are looking at our trends. We are looking at impacts. We are looking at demographics. We are looking at participation. We are looking at where energy is going and how all those things come together, and focusing our attentions more aggressively in these arenas. In doing so, we are making some structural changes. You see some of that in our budget with our Parks and Trails merger. You see some of that in some of the discussions we've been having in exploring the creating of a new division by combining some activities, and we can talk about that a little bit further. But you do get into some of the more intimate details of our budget in this document. And as the chair pointed out to me earlier, remind them that this is on our website for the citizens to go and look at also. Members, we have just sent you a letter, the conference committee a letter, and it lines out the significant differences between the two bodies, between the two bills. And I'm just going to walk through this letter briefly and touch on some of the higher points. This letter was put together before we actually had a chance to see a side-by-side, so it may appear to be somewhat broken or fragmented, but we structured it by division and then talked about some bigger, larger general fund impacts further in the back and more agency impacts. But specifically, let me hit some high points. In your side-by-side, you have in Section 18, let's see how we structured this. Be on page R80. It is on the Senate side, it's the land sale extension. I watched the committee this morning talk about that land sale extension. And I want to touch on a couple points. One, please understand, the land sale provision and the dollars that are being booked have already been spent by previous legislatures. This is an accounting shift of these dollars covering the costs of previous legislature spending. And now we are just dealing with the revenues generated to keep that accounting in the system moving forward. What we have asked for in the governor's rec is to have that extended, not because we don't believe we have gone through the processes of identifying lands and putting lands, getting lands ready. When I say we've processed them, what we've done is we've gone in and looked at our inventory of lands and looked at them strategically and said, do these meet the purposes of our mission? Do these continue to hold for our mission long-term recreational values? We also looked at where did these lands come from? How did they originate? Were they bought with Game and Fish Fund? Were they bought with bonding money? Or were they previous lands owned by the state that we took custodial control over? We looked at all these different factors, and that took us some time. We're prepared, and we are having an auction May 27th, I believe. If you go on our website, you'll see, you can go in there and see the lands that we are putting up for auction this year. Those lands are dedicated towards this particular sale. We're asking for the extension, the governor's rec, to extend that period of time out for the business approach to it. Is this the right time to be selling large volumes of land? And that's how we're approaching it. So we're prepared to move forward on large volume of land and put that on the market this later this month. But at the same time, we're also wanting to look and step back from a business perspective and manage these lands maybe slightly different if we've got the ability to manage this over a couple more years. So that the piece within there that extends it for 2 years is a good idea. We appreciate that. The one thing that is a little bit concerning is the restriction on items of land that are contained within the outdoor rec system. That's virtually all of the lands that we manage within the Department of Natural Resources. That will not impact this spring sale. The lands that are contained in that, many of them, which were WMAs, have been through the vacation process. They've been removed from that classification, and they are on the vacant surplus list. And those have already moved forward. But it could hamper us if we are unable to meet those targeted goals that have been set forward to us to meet that objective. And we would request that that language that prevents us from being able to use outdoor rec systems in the future to meet this requirement. That would be a piece. You know, Madam, if members have a question at any time, I think it would be...
I think the best way to proceed here is after you have finished...
A block.
And okay. This is a block, I think, and you finish that we will take questions on this. So if members have questions. Yes, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, you haven't mentioned the issue of supplanting, and I'm sure, as you know, the Lessard Council recommendations include recommendations to buy, Representative Hansen, I'm looking at you, I think 40 new WMAs potentially are on the list. And so it seems to me that if we're selling WMAs to fill a budget hole on the one hand and buying new ones with legacy dollars, that's a perfect example of supplanting that we can't be doing by constitution. So I wonder if you could respond to that.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure I can. I don't see that connection. The managing of an asset for whichever purposes, the state has a responsibility to manage these assets. How that becomes a supplanting issue, I guess I don't understand that deeply enough, and how you're going to plan to manage that in the future.
Well, Madam Chair, Commissioner, I think the simple question is, are you proposing to sell some WMAs in order to meet state budget requirements?
Madam Chair, we are proposing to sell lands that we have assessed its value as a WMA or assessed its value in terms of the state's mission and goals and objectives. And if they don't, we are surplusing them. So we are taking them out of a WMA status and we will, for the time being, to meet the obligation of this particular 2005 law obligation, sell those lands. Now, that doesn't mean we would be looking forward in the future to be doing the same process of identifying these lands, assessing them, selling that capital asset, and then reinvesting it back into other state assets of conservation lands. So, and maybe that's the separation that you're looking for, is sale for general fund previous spending or asset management of those assets, sell, rebuy with those assets. Is that the question?
Madam Chair, Commissioner, if you're talking about just selling them for the purpose of management and reusing those funds to buy new outdoor land, then I think that is exactly what the Senate language allows. But I thought your testimony was that you need to sell these to help balance the budget from a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the supplanting.
Madam Chair, we're trying to meet the requirements of the 2005 law that tells us to sell these assets, and we're trying to fill that obligation.
I am troubled by what you said when you said we are, you know, taking it out of WMA's status. Do you make findings of fact that the public can see when you choose to do that? Because it seems to me with our buying new lands and wanting a net increase, that could be very troubling, that the commissioner can say, well, we're just changing the status, taking it out of WMA status.
Madam Chair, we have a process that we follow through. We make we let the local units of government know, both city, county, also let other state agencies. We inform other state agencies, including the university, of that decision to surplus land. Then in the vacation process of its status from WMA, we then hold public hearings within the community so that the community has an understanding of what's going on before those decisions are actually made. And we've already gone through those processes with the lands that we're talking about.
Senator Anderson.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm sorry, just to follow up on your question. I think, for example, some of the proposed sales, and maybe I'm completely wrong, but are WMA land where they're close to developed areas, and so there are now limitations on hunting, perhaps, and that is causing you to recommend sale? Is that true?
Madam Chair, one of the things that we do when we go out and we do a field audit of those particular lands, and we ask our field biologists to make recommendations. And one of the things that they go look at, particularly in the WMA area, is if development has encroached upon it, where it has those land use decisions has destroyed the nature and the purpose for why those lands were either, one, acquired or managed for a certain purpose. That could trip it into a category where we would say, let's sell this asset.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes.
I think I'm concerned about that. It's one thing if it's developed to the point that the land is no longer has any value as natural land, but it seems to me that as development occurs, the need to have recreation land for the population around it only increases, even if the uses might have to change. And so, you know, it seems to me that this needs to be looked at in a broader perspective, so that if it's not suitable to be a WMA anymore because you can't hunt on it, perhaps it should be turned into a park rather than sold for development, so that the population has no outdoor natural area to recreate in. It sounds like would be your perspective on where to go.
Madam Chair, we recognize that all lands that are open have a natural resource value. We recognize that and we embrace that. And two things, again, we need to separate the process we're going through to meet the obligation of law the 2005 law that says the state shall sell these assets, and asset management and the state's management of those assets and converting assets to better or high-quality assets. That's a process that we have done in the past and will continue to do in the future. And we need to make sure we separate those two things out. I agree. Those assets that are in communities where those communities have made land use management decisions and have impacted the value of that land, we have to look at how those lands came into being. If that asset was purchased with Game and Fish Fund, if that asset was purchased with some other type of state resources, that fund should be compensated. And that asset should be compensated so that that asset can be converted in. The community is in a situation, and that's why we go to the local units of government and say, we are notifying you that this piece of property is being converted. They have first say, they have first dibs in whether they would like to purchase or not. For example, the city of Rochester has made it very clear that they are very interested in the unit that we are putting up in Rochester, and that's a decision that we will be making is in terms of how to manage that.
Do local units of government have first refusal?
Madam Chair, in the asset management piece, they have the ability of first refusal at the appraised value.
I'm finished.
Madam Chair, just to be clear, not in the 6.44 2005 law, they do not.
They do not.
That was very clearly written in the 2005 law and then subsequently repassed in the last biennium. They are notified. They're provided with that, but they are not provided that first right of refusal.
Senator, we've got lots of questions here. Senator Saxhog is next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I know when a WMA isn't a WMA anymore, and I think you've figured that out too. But there's no question about it that the Senate bill would restrict the way that you use the money if you made the sale. My question to you, Commissioner, is so. Do you think you have any? It said it severely restricts the DNR's ability to meet the 6.4 million general fund target. Do you think you have any type of a chance of ever coming close to selling 6.4 million, realistically?
Madam Chair, Senator Saxhog, the 6.44 is a reference point to the original 2005 law. The asset, I believe, is the obligation is down to $3.94 million. That's the current status. With the lands that we have up on the May sale, if we get bids, and that's the question in this economic situation, and that's why we've asked for the extension, if we get appraised value, we'll meet that obligation this spring.
Thank you.
Pass. But, Madam Chair, Senators, what we're asking for is the ability to manage that on a little look at this as a business. Think about this a little, this asset and its sale opportunity with a little bit more forethought in terms of the business opportunity of selling. Some of these assets may be better off divided into multiple units and sold at different times. Or some of them are, the Rochester unit is a relatively large block of land. We may want to sell a portion of it now, hold on to it, and then market it at a different time. The deadline of the end of this biennium is problematic to do that. We would have to sell the whole asset in May. We would prefer to approach it with a little bit more business mindset and take advantage of the economic situations.
Senator Frederickson is
next.
I'll
pass, Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Commissioner, does the 2005 law require only the DNR to make the sales of these lands?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, no, it does not. It is to the state of Minnesota. It is incumbent upon the Commissioner of administration to distribute that proportionately across state government, and that we talk about it in the terms of the DNR because we hold the largest volume of assets in the state, volume-wise. The state has been in a asset-selling mode for a number of years, and we have run through those assets of buildings that have that met the original 2003 obligation of $5.3 million, I believe it was. That was the first land sale, capitalized assets to cover state spending bill that came through. Most of those assets were state buildings, some state lands. The 2005 law, as we have processed it through, there has been some buildings, but that surplus of buildings has already run its course, and we are down to land assets.
Follow-up?
For the most part. Now, not to suggest that the DNR would be responsible for the whole 3.9 obligation. I don't mean to give that impression, but it is fair to say that we would likely receive the lion's share of that obligation.
So, Commissioner, how much have the other agencies sold out of their land assets? What's the value of what they've sold so far?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I'm sorry. Over the last couple of years, I can't. I know it was at 6.44. We're down to 4. Our contribution to that is somewhere between $800 and $1 million of this particular one. So that would be balance there.
So, Madam Chair.
This particular one.
So, Madam Chair, Commissioner, if it was supposed to be proportionally spread across all of the agencies, as you just testified, why don't we know what the other agencies have sold as well?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, that responsibility was handed to the Commissioner of Administration to distribute those across. All agencies have been in the process of identifying assets that to be surplused and transferred.
This is the list by agency.
Volumes?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I have a document from Department of Administration that goes through 0405, 0506, 0507, and the different assets by unit. The 0405, it was the state sold $7.5 million worth of assets. The largest piece came from Human Services, Department of Administration, and the Department of Corrections. 0607, $1.6 million of assets. The largest piece came from Human Services, and then Department of Natural Resources was the second. The 809, looks like the Perpich Center was the largest single block of value. We've sold the third, and that's where the running totals are. So in terms of total assets sold since 04, roughly $9.8 million. Human Services, 5.4. Natural Resources, 1.4. Admin, 1.7. Just to give you a flavor of assets that have been sold.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, you said that's since 04, but this is a 2005 law, so I'm not getting a flavor at all of my question. How much have the other agencies sold for the purpose of this general fund obligation since 2005?
Senator Chaudhry, I gave you that 0405 just so you understood. That was the first land sale for spending requirement. So that was the first time this approach took place. So I'm sorry, 06, 07, Human Services 1.5 in the first, that year, the biennium, 160,000 in the second biennium. DNR $580,000 and almost $100,000 in this recent years. Those are the largest blocks. Perpich Center was $350,000 here, I believe, in the last year. So it has been distributed across state government. We have been, as a state, looking at those surplusable assets to sell. We at the Department of Natural Resources took a step back and wanted to look at it not for the single purpose of meeting this obligation, but approach it from an asset management perspective. So we took a deeper, more thorough review of our lands, knowing that we would be coming to the end of this biennium and needing a larger sale, but that we would have a much more comprehensive, much more thorough review of our lands so that we could meet the obligation of the 05 law, but also look at the assets that were in front of us or that we were managing or not managing and look to capitalize on those lands in the future to convert those assets to better assets.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, I don't know how you can convert them to better assets if you're sending the proceeds to the general fund.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhary, again, there are two systems. There is the 05 law where we're required by law to capitalize on these assets to pay for previous spending. Then we have asset management where we capitalize on that asset, take the revenues from it, convert that into future assets. It's two different, there's two different mechanisms to have this. There's two different mechanisms in the land sale or asset approach. Meet the obligation of 05. We believe we'll do that here in the next calendar year. In the future sales, this fall, next spring, we will be capitalizing on those assets and converting them into better assets.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, you keep alternating between the two systems, but we're only talking about one in this bill. It's the obligation from 05 mm-hmm. to put proceeds into the general fund.
Yes.
This provision does not prohibit you from selling land. It does not prohibit you from using the proceeds to manage your assets better. It only prohibits you from putting the proceeds of those lands into the general fund, and only with regards to this category of land. That's all. And I guess that's the reasoning behind it. If you share a different point of view that these lands should be sold for the purposes of filling the general fund, I guess that's your position. But it is this position, the position of the Senate, that we value these lands more than just filling a general fund hole, that we don't disagree with managing assets better, but the proceeds should go back into the same type of assets. That's all this bill is saying.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhary, it was never the agency's position to ever capitalize on these assets, these natural resource assets, to cover state spending. It's never been the position. That's a position of the legislature from 03, 05, 07. That's been the position of the legislature. We're trying to meet that obligation that's been handed on to us. We don't like it, but that's what you've charged us with doing. I don't believe that, again, I personally don't believe that the restrictions in this particular law, this particular category, should cause us a problem. But the ideology at this late junction to try to put this value of saying we shouldn't use these particular lands now, after the last 6 years of doing this approach, at this last minute, the last 2 months before the end of the biennium, might be prohibitive, and we're just staying true with the ideology that the legislature has handed to us. With the lands that we have surplus, with the lands that we project to sale, again, if we get people bidding, if we get what we think these lands are appraised out to, the language won't be an issue.
So, Madam Chair, Commissioner Holson, it sounds like you're arguing for this provision pretty well today.
Madam Chair,
seems
Senator
like
Chaudhry,
it's far more
not in
than,
any way.
Seems like it's far more than
Senator Chaudhry, please come to
charge.
The chair. I think we're going to... Yeah. We've reached an impasse here and need
Fine.
To move on.
I think the
on.
Point's made.
Pardon?
I think the point's made.
I think let's move on to the next... continue
Madam,
with the next bullets.
Madam Chair, the next significant piece is in the Division of Forestry. In the Senate position... The reduction in the fire prevention, we want the members to understand that this is an area where we spend volumes of state resources in the fighting of fire. When we looked back as an agency and tried to build our budgets, one of the things that we talked about, what is our highest priority as an agency? And if we were to throw everything else out, firefighting becomes the number one thing. The protection of our public safety, the public's assets, both public and private assets, firefighting and forest fighting comes to the top of that list. It's critically important that we have the staging of materials on the preventative side, the contracting with contractors to do aerial fire protection, and the staging of equipment. That's what the direct provides us. We're concerned with that this reduction may hamper that, and we'll have to approach that preventative side differently, spreading those assets out in a wider or more distributive system. In doing so, that may lead to slower response time to fire. We're just bringing it to your attention. What it does then is it puts us into the open faster. But it is that particular time between how we manage the direct and then once we kick into the open, there'll be a lag period of time before we can make those contracts and what contracts haven't already been executed by other states and other regions of the country. For those services. So it's just a management issue we want to bring to your attention. It's a concern of ours.
We continue, unless there are questions on that.
Madam Chair, members, the next area in the forest management is we recognize the general fund difficulties you are under. We have them as we have tried to put this budget together. But an area of impact that you just need to understand is that private forest management is an area where, in the forest arena, we need to be making some investment. We have the responsibility of management of our state lands, but providing assistance to private landowners, it's an important tool to help our ecology, our forest health, both forest and other lands, being able to work with private landowners and help them. In the body of the document, you'll see in the second paragraph where we actually contract out with soil and watershed districts to get the on-the-ground services to get to private landowners to help them manage their lands, to answer their questions about how to best manage their lands for natural resource purposes. Madam Chair, the next area is in the arena of parks and trails. We talk about, particularly here, we are into the dedicated accounts, the issues of where the dollars are being appropriated. In the dedicated accounts, we had $725,000 that we were asking for to be able to go on to our, 1,500, out of our 1,500 water access sites, to be able to go in and do shoreline restoration. It's an important tool that we think we need to show through our own actions the proper shoreline management that in many cases was not done in the past. Some of these sites need to be reconstructed for water quality purposes, but also show the public through a demonstrative perspective how to best manage those shorelines into the future. And we think this is a reasonable use of these funds to do that. Madam Chair, in the next arena in the same area, we came forward with an opportunity that we talked about in terms of outreach and access and building outdoor skills with the community. And this is an arena that we are looking as we are looking at our state's demographics and the changing participation rates, the necessity to go out into the minority community, to go out into the community of our youth, particularly our youth, and be able to access them and bring them into our parks and trail system and trying to encourage them to participate in recreational opportunities through our parks and trails, encouraging them also then getting an outdoor educational experience. And it was an item that we brought forward in the governor's budget. I thought it was in the Senate, but it's in the House.
It's in the Senate language, not in the House.
Okay. It's in the Senate side, not in the House.
If we could hold on there for a second, Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, Assistant Commissioner Meyer, is this the section that we spent a great deal of time on in the environmental finance? And I think the concern, I mean, there was, I think, support in the House committee about doing outreach to folks who may not be participating very much or that could participate more. But the source of the funds seemed to be the what was causing some difficulty. And maybe if you could talk about the source of the funds, because I think that's where there was challenges.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, that's a good point. Traditionally, this would have probably been a general fund type of expenditure. But when we started looking at the activities, we are challenged in the Department of Natural Resources being that three-quarters of our budget is dedicated accounts. It is user fee-based. And so we try to attach the type of recreational activities we would bring to the table, boating, water recreation-based activities through boating in those arenas, so we went to the Water Rec account. Trail use, both motorized and non-motorized trail use, and opening those opportunities for the public to see what recreational opportunities were there. Snowmobiling, we are looking to go into utilizing our trail system, again, into outdoor winter recreation. It's, we believe, an underutilized recreational opportunity. I understand the dialogue that took place in the House. I understand the concerns that, particularly with the direction we are going currently with the merger of Parks and Trails and the creating of a new recreational unit, why those concerns are there. But we feel it's imperative that we begin these steps, and we felt it was appropriate to use these funds if we are going to drive recreation into these arenas also.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, was there, since that committee hearing, has there been any additional follow-up with particularly the snowmobile groups? Because it seemed to be that's where there was some direct opposition.
Madam Chair, members, we have been working with Minnesota United Snowmobile Association and the other impacted organizations. I do believe we can come back with some amended language that would address everybody's concern and allow this program to move forward. So, at the appropriate time, we can get that language to the committee members.
Madam Chair, this would be the appropriate time.
Thank you. The proposal that we've talked about in the House, I think, is acceptable to most people, which would remove the $55,000 from the snowmobile account but continue the appropriation to come from the Water Rec account, the Natural Resources account. Perhaps maybe make this a one-time appropriation would also make some other people more comfortable from some of the testimony we heard in, I think it was House Finance Committee.
It was in House Finance Committee, and I did not think that alternative had the votes to pass. I think the same resistance to protecting the accounts was equally strong. It's just that one was talked about. So I do think we have problems here. Did you have, but one of the things that was missing is, did you have a list of specific proposals that you were going to do with this money and specific outcomes you expect it to achieve?
Madam Chair, members, the proposal that we had, and I don't have the fact sheet right with me, but it talked about focusing on water rec-based activities because of the decline that we are seeing in there, such as canoe kayaking opportunities. It also focused on boating and fishing-related activities, and also the tie to the natural resource account, the park or in the parks, the camping, the access to the outdoors within the trail system, those types of activities. I can certainly get that for you, Madam Chair, as soon as I'm done here and get that handed out to the committee.
I think folks were concerned about the lack of specificity. Am I correct with that? I think that was another concern.
Madam Chair, I'm trying to remember this compared to the other, I think it was also a supplemental recommendation for money to explore Minnesota to work on state parks outreach or a website. Maybe how is that different from this?
Madam Chair, that is a working relationship that we have started with the Explore Minnesota to piggyback on their promotional activities around Minnesota recreational and Minnesota tourism, specifically driving people into our parks and trail systems. So you will begin to see advertising this spring that is targeted at a specific target market of Minnesota citizens and letting them know what is available to them and to encourage them to go out and use that park and rec system. We are looking through the recommendation in the governor's supplemental for additional resources in the next biennium to continue that relationship. A little bit very different in that that's a advertisement base. This is going to be a hands-on recruitment and activity based with the citizens. Okay, Madam Chair, the next point, it's a small item in terms of the dollars, but it's just one to point out. We have been in the wolf delisting game for 10 years now with the federal government. I was remembering back, I think, Senator Frederickson, you were on the wolf delisting, wolf state management plan conference committee, if I remember right.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, I don't think I was.
You weren't.
I was involved in the certainly involved in the issue, but I don't think I was on that conference committee. Although I may have been, I've been on a conference committee.
Senator Lurie was a.
Yes, and Madam Chair, I remember visiting with Senator Lurie, the first Senator Lurie, before that.
Yes.
During that conference committee, I wasn't on it either, but I was engaged in the discussion.
Yeah. Anyway, as we have gone through that dialogue and listing and not delisting and listing and not delisting process for the last 10 years, it is now back, appears to be going to be a delisted animal back into the management of the state's system. In doing so, in that interim period of time where we take over the management of the species, we are responsible for both the research, but also the depredation cost. We put it through as a non-game animal, so we use the non-game fund. I understand the difference of positions, and we believe it is a accessible use of those resources. Madam Chair, the next piece is...
Well, Madam Chair, Commissioner, I think it says here that if we... Okay, I'm trying to understand what you said here, that this could reduce the fiscal obligations in the Department of Ag to pay for livestock killed by wolves.
They're getting rid of it. Mm-hmm.
But you're not.
Madam Chair, I believe in the Department of Ag's budget recommendation, they are transferring this responsibility over to the DNR for this program. Madam Chair, the next piece I know is of interest to Senator Saxog, but is the Sport Shooting Center. That is a facility that we have the state built some odd years ago. We have struggled with operation of that, and we are in the process now of making a decision on its future. And we want the subcommittee to understand we are looking for an alternative use for that facility today. and its closure is in process. Madam Chair, a second item. It is, again, a very small technical item, but it is one that will impact us in our ELS licensing system. We have gone through a variety of iteration of different types of paper material to print our license systems on. A requirement came in from the House that does not allow, requires that we purchase that from a Minnesota company. I fully understand that, and I would agree with that in principle. We have not been able to find a vendor for the cost benefit in Minnesota to provide that paper, and just need the committee to know. In doing so, it will likely increase our operational costs. Madam Chair, members, the next item is one of, as I have talked with the chair, the heritage enhancement amount. It is a $8.1 million a year budget proposal from the Heritage Enhancement Fund. We use these dollars statutorily dedicated to the improvement, enhancement, and protection of our fish and wildlife resources. The House language requires that 80% be used on purchase and up to 80% be purchase and restoration, half must be used for restoration. When we look at how our budgets have been built over the last several bienniums in this arena and our spending plans that we have are putting forward, the traditional ways we have done in the past, this language has a significant impact on the operation of the agency and impacting. We were able to put some numbers together and talk about what this language would do. We are talking about 30 potential FTEs of impact based upon the spending plans with these dollars, and it would reduce activities on the top of page 4, specifically dealing with fish and wildlife research, some habitat enhancement work in the forest, brushland, wetland areas, again, some technical assistance that we provide to private landowners, some enhancements that we do on streams, and you see the projects listed there, and some of our stocking activities that we do. These have been funds that we have traditionally used from this fund. We have talked with the chair, and we are working on some. Is this the correct numbers now?
Yes. Well, it's
Madam Chair, members, the discussion that I've been having with the Director Shad from the Fish and Wildlife Division, it focuses around the definition of restoration and the activities we do. And maybe for clarification, would a shallow lake drawdown project be considered restoration or enhancement? The concern we have is the strict language that this requires us in this section, when we already have strong guidance in 297A from the Heritage Enhanced Lottery and Lou Dollars, it has strict statutory language that says we can only use these dollars to conserve, protect, restore, or enhance. Is a shallow lake drawdown a restoration? If the consensus is yes, then we may be okay. Is a prescribed burn on a prairie restoration or an enhancement? This is the literal line that we're looking at these activities because of this language. And we need to make sure that we can do these projects with these dollars, because this is what we're doing with these dollars right now. If we can come to an agreement that those are restoration projects, we may be okay at the 40% level. If we look at the language that's in the House Heritage Bill, for the definition of restoration that's in the House bill in its current form, we're okay. But we need to make sure that there's flexibility, that we're able to spend these dollars as we have historically for the activities that we do that are restoration, enhancement, and protection. So we aren't proposing changing anything. We want to make sure that any unintended consequences of definition or language in this section does not impede us or make us deal with a workforce layoff because of the language that would be associated with this appropriation.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator, Representative Hansen.
Commissioner Meyer, so just looking at the language here, how much currently is spent on acquisition out of this appropriation?
Madam Chair, members,
generally.
Acquisition out of this account, I can get you the historic number, but this hasn't been a historic source of acquisition dollars. The language in 297A focuses on the activities, and we spend most of these dollars on restoration, enhancement, and protection, not acquisition, because historically the acquisition dollars that we use are game and fish, are bonding, LCCMR, and now heritage dollars as well. So I can get you a breakdown of that really quickly, what we have been doing with acquisition. But the concern is that the language that's in the bill that caps it at least 80%, which would be about $6.5 million, be used to purchase or restore land. And of that, over half must be used for restoration. That's where it becomes tricky, taking that $6.5 million and requiring $3.25 million at least be used on restoration, and then comparing that to the enhancement and protection activities we've been doing within the division as well. I think we're all on the same page. We want to do the best we can to protect the land asset that the state has. We just want to make sure that the language doesn't prohibit us from doing it.
So, Madam Chair, so you're looking for addition of enhancement or protection, and you view that protection and acquisition are two different things.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, in how the legislature has used the word protection in this arena, protection has been used very broadly. I should say in the standard arena, and that's part of the dialogue as we are starting to, as the management of natural resources continues to mature and expand, and we start to define these protection, restoration, enhancement, and how those funds are going to be utilized. We want it, in part, to be clear, and we think it ought to be uniform across all the funds so that we don't have one standard for the Environmental Trust Fund and another standard for these funds. We think it ought to be uniform across, and so we want to work with you if this is the direction that the legislature is looking to go and be more definitive in what these items are, then we want to engage in that dialogue and be part of that. But right now, as we start to try to lock them down with undefined terms, it means something. So the statutory use of it was clear to us in the statutory guidance that it was for restoration, for enhancement, and protection. And when we looked into the traditional allocations from the legislature, that was somewhat broad.
And, Madam Chair, Commissioner, so it's better to have a broader net for protection rather than protection equaling acquisition.
Madam Chair, I always argue for broad and flexibility.
Thank you for that clarification. If you want to continue.
Madam Chair, members, the next one is we move into the arena of eco-resources, specifically the invasive species account. There is a shift in the Senate side, $725,000 for structural deficit that we currently occur in the invasive species area, but this is coming at the expense of our shoreline improvement program that we were looking to categorize. We believe in the second paragraph we outline to you a different way that we think we can approach this, and we have a longer-term fix that is not able to be executed now. In previous years, we had a budget recommendation that was moving through the process for surcharges on both utility trailers and recreational vehicles. What we learned through that process was specifically that the Department of Public Safety's computer system wasn't able to handle this type of download at its time. The legislature has been making investments into that particular system, and when that new system comes online, they'll have the capacity to expand into this arena to allow us to capture these resources for the invasive species program. So we're requesting that you look at this alternative approach on a one-time transfer to shore up the or make sure that the accounts do not go into the red.
Well, Madam Chair, think I hear you saying you agree there's a structural problem with the invasive species account.
Yes.
And the urgency is certainly not going away. It's getting more serious. So you, and early in the memo, you say you want us to spend the money on shoreline access, boat launches, and I understand what you're saying about one-time money, but are you asking us to fund both of those out of the Water Rec account? Or if you think we can only afford one, which one do you think is a priority?
Madam Chair, Senator, we have a lot of activities going on in the invasive species. It would be ridiculous for me to try to sit here and argue that we shouldn't be making more investments into invasive species. At the same time, though, we need to be thoughtful in those approaches as we continue to identify ways to fund those types of programs. We want you to understand you're making a choice between shoreline restoration, and that was the agency and governor's recommendation, to shore up or to make some investments in invasive species. Both are high priority categories. It was from the accounts. When we looked at the accounts and appropriate uses, we felt that the shoreline approach was the better one, understanding we also have to make some investments in invasive species. But in saying that, however you go, we need to make sure that in it's encapsulated in the second paragraph on how to approach the funding of it.
If I could follow up on that, if the House were to take the Senate's position on this and make sure that invasive species was taken care of, and the Senate took the position of the House and didn't use the money for Outdoors Minnesota, if I recall correctly, a lot of that money was from the Outdoor Rec account, I mean that same account. So am I correct about that?
You know, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I tried to follow that, and it bounced.
Okay, I'll try again.
Thank you.
If the House were to take the Senate's position, because the House is equally concerned as the Senate, I'm sure, about invasive species, and that would not have as much money for Water Rec then, but if then the Senate took the House position on Outdoors Minnesota and didn't fund that, that would free up some money for the activities that you're talking about right now.
Well, Madam Chair, maybe I could put it a different way. Can you prioritize among those three items? I think I had asked you to prioritize between shoreline access and invasive species. And I guess you said they're both important, but if Outdoors Minnesota is added in the mix,
that's another way.
Where would you put that on the list? One, two, or three? Just to give us some guidance.
We'll get back to you.
Okay.
I just need to. It's hard here at the table. I want to take a look at the spreadsheets and see how those. If we're getting into the business of horse trading already, I kind of want to just see it on paper and see what it looks like. So.
We're looking at priorities. It's not horse trading.
You know, in that, understand, members, that this is the conflict we are in as an agency when we are trying to manage those three pressures or those three values, economic development, recreation, and protection. They many times come into very adverse conflict with one another and sometimes detrimentally. We try to balance and balance those things out. At the same time, when they come from dedicated accounts, we have to adhere to the principles in which those accounts were designed and the guidance that we are provided through the statutes. And it's while at the same time trying to look out, which is something government, we like to think we do a good job of it, we're trying to take a little bit further look out and be responsive to those emerging problems, those emerging trends, and be relevant to our society in the future. So we will get that.
Madam Chair, members, if you look in our letter on that section, the last line there does contain a proposal that we had. If you reduce the one-time transfers to 214 and 10 and 578 and 11, the account can sustain both of those appropriations. So there's some numbers. I know we're missing a few fiscal staff right now, but I think there is a solution that we can come up with that can take all three of those ideas into play and go from there. So we do appreciate your willingness and understanding of the importance of these issues. Thank you.
Senator Fredrickson, did you have a question here?
Madam Chair, I did. The amount of money transferred in the Senate side is $725,000. If you add the recommendation of the department, that last line, that comes up to like 792. So you want to transfer the larger amount as your recommendation?
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, what I was referring to is rather than the 725, you would make one-time appropriations to be 214 and 10 and 578 and 11.
Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, that totals more than the 725 in the Senate proposal.
I believe the Senate language is 725 each year. Page R47, lines 28.1
to 28.8. Each year, yes, you're correct.
Senator Fredrickson, did you have a
follow-up?
I'm done.
No. Okay. Madam Chair, members, the next one is we are talking about the general fund reduction, and again, recognize the complexity. And our approach was a little bit different than you've seen in the past, where we asked for, we took general fund reductions across and then asked for a substantive general fund reduction, unidentified, to allow us to try to manage those costs over the biennium. The House provides us that flexibility, and we appreciate that as we try to manage our resources appropriately. So we would support that flexibility coming from the House.
Representative Hansen has a question on that.
Madam Chair, actually, I think we skipped a bullet point there, the compensation of the governor's staff.
Oh.
And I'm wondering what the dollar amount on that language is.
Do you know? You know, Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, I'll have to get that number for you. I'm sorry. But members, to that point, it is, it's been a practice for the executive branch to bill for those types of shared services that, whether it's between relation to the governor's office and that relationship back to the legislature. And it's one that understand the complexities of the time, but one that we think is an important one to be able to maintain that type of flow of information, one between the executive branch and also with the legislative branch. Members, the last item is an item that is contained within on the Senate side. It is a restrictive provision that is, we have announced back in several weeks ago, we announced that we were looking to create a new division around watershed management and looking to utilize the resources of two divisions and bring their skills and their strengths to the table and create a new division, not stepping away from the things that they do programmatically, but take their power and their energies and focus them into a watershed approach. As we talk more and more into today and into the future about water and about proper land use management decisions around natural resources, the necessity for us to have a division who's got the foresight, the capabilities, the strengths to help us emerge into this arena, we want to make this new division a backbone of our agency and help guide the future decisions, both for the agency but also for the state and local units of government. This restriction of not being able to implement till 2011 is very problematic for us, and one that not sure that it would totally change how we would be looking to approach. This is one that We didn't announce this with here's a blueprint and here's an org chart of merging two divisions. We're approaching this in a thoughtful approach, looking to utilize outside resources of the different organizations that are impacted, and use the department and also are partnered with us to try to create something that will help us emerge, as I said, into the future, using good science of the ecology of our landscape, both land and water, and the hydrology of our land systems and our water systems, and bringing them together to provide us with that direction and that leadership that we feel is necessary for us to move forward. So we would, we don't like the sound language.
This is a good time to ask you about the fees raised by the Senate. This is a good time to ask you about the water fees raised by the Senate.
That was in my notes to take a look at over the hour while you were talking about energy. Madam Chair, one of the things that we have as I'll take a look at this. One of the things that for decades, back in my tenure in the legislature and something that I've seen continue here, the Division of Waters is a virtually wholly a general fund appropriated division. And as we have come forward in the past looking for asking for fee increases on summer surcharges or water appropriation fees, we've brought those recommendations to the legislature in the past, and those recommendations for increasing the fees have been supported. But sometimes, most of the time, those resources are then diverted to other spending activity and not into the areas that we were looking to maximize or create new or expand programs for. Groundwater management, groundwater research, and those programs around waters, they're used someplace else. It's that tension between being a wholly funded general fund activity inside an agency who is three-fourths dedicated accounts. We have worked hard over the years to try to diversify funding streams, and we just have not done or been able to succeed in the waters arena on diversified funding streams, being dedicated accounts and general fund. And that's the Senate language. You're creating a new account. That's good.
Madam Chair, just for the record, the department did propose a summer surcharge water fee increase a biennium ago, and the legislature liked the idea, but they didn't want to give the department the money. So I think what we're trying to say is that if we are going to do this, let's make sure the money goes for the intended purposes rather than to supplement or supplant, however you want to look at it, the general fund. So it's important that we come up with a constant, consistent source of revenue for the water activities. If you're going to propose the fee and do that, please make sure it's used for the intended purpose.
Okay, so essentially, I'm hearing approval of the Senate position as long as it is into a separate water account where the dollars are used to pay for the activities of that of water management.
I'm sure that's close.
Yeah.
Not in the governor's budget, but if you're going to do it, make sure you use the money for its intended purpose.
Madam Chair, I need to take a look, and I have not seen the impacts and what this does. I need to review that before we would make a recommendation to this committee on the increased revenues. I haven't had a chance to review the revenue streams and see what those impacts are.
It's good, sounded pretty good to
me. It's good in terms of how the creation of that diversified funding stream to the Division of Waters. But, again, I have not reviewed and need to do that before I make a recommendation.
Well, I would say 12 hours.
I totally understand the timelines, Madam Chair.
All right. Senator Frederick.
Madam Chair, Mr. Myers, at least for some of us in the Senate, the intended use of raising the fees was to discourage the free, cheap use of water, which we're beginning to realize is a limited resource. I think there was more, probably more attention paid to that than there was where the funds were going once they were collected.
And Madam Chair, Senator Frederickson, I recognize that approach. The concern that we've always had with this is that we don't believe we have been able to provide you the answers that you need, what local communities answers that they need for their development needs in relationship to that groundwater usage. And the protection of our aquifers and the management of that. Yes, fees present an opportunity to try to influence the users of that water. If we're going to create a dedicated account, we would support that arena for the purposes of reinvestment back into management.
Any other questions from members here? Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, I wanted to touch base on the issue of forests for the future or the forest study, that there is a difference between the House and Senate on that. And I think this is a governor's rec as well as a Senate recommendation. Maybe I'm not calling it by its right name. Senator Saxog, you can help me.
Well, the forests for the future are
productivity for the future. That's
right,
what it's called.
Right. I think we're talking about the study initiated by Dr. Kilgore that talked about the splitting up of the forest, you know, and fragmentation of the forest, and Dr. Kilgore started it in Itasca County, and this would just complete that study. But, Madam Chair, there's something that probably could be added that would be very beneficial for a very small amount of money to that particular program. Mr. Brandt, could you fill us in just briefly on what we were talking about, Forest for the Future? Yeah. Is this part of the DNR?
Did you move it?
Wayne Brandt, Minnesota Forest Industries. If you could repeat the question.
Well, we were talking about the forests of the future and what that is included right now, the Minnesota Forest Resource Council. And you and I were talking about another addition that could be made to that, make it even more effective.
Madam Chair, Senator Saxog, yes, in the House, some language was added. It was a bill that Representative Anzels had that would have the Forest Resources Council look at one of the recommendations from the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. And that recommendation, I believe, was the one in that report that showed the greatest potential ability to absorb and sequester carbon. And that recommendation was to plant an additional 1 million acres of trees, which is a great recommendation, but you know, you'd need to go through a process of looking at where is the land that's available, where historically there's been forest cover, what are the soils, so that you can determine what types of trees you would best plant in those areas, what the costs would be, what's the availability of native planting stocks so that we could match the native species to the soils, to the ground that's available, what's the ownership of those acres, is there really 1 million acres available, is it 600,000, is it 1.2 million, and then what's the availability of the planting stock, and what would the costs be, and then how much carbon over what period of time would be sequestered. So we think it's important work, along with the language from the department on the $250,000 for the study that was included by the Senate. And, you know, we would hope that the conference committee would give consideration to the interrelationship of those projects.
So, Madam Chair, we know that the Force for the Future was in the Senate bill, and that the Senator, Representative Anzels was in here on the House side, and that might be a good combination.
At $250,000. It's real money. Did you have one more thing you wanted to say?
Just, Madam Chair, the governor's initial proposal was $250,000 for a different study. It was to look at our nursery system and how to make that our nursery system for the next decade, next generation, I should say, how to make it more competitive and work closer with the private industry folks. So it's really not the same proposal, just so members understand that.
Thank you. That is not in either bill. While you're up here, and I know there are a couple more questions. Let me start off with one. On the shoreland rules, there was the both the Senate and the House said took $500,000 from that process with the assurance that the shoreland rules would continue. And I think we need to have some assurance on the record that that is both true and exactly what happens going forward now if you don't have that money.
Madam Chair, just so the members know, we are continuing with the development of the shoreline rules. The rules are in the process of being developed and going out for public comment. The recommendation that we brought forward was to take the dollars from the implementation, which we would have used to go out and work more collaboratively with the counties to implement. The implementation, the rule will be going into effect. When the rule goes into effect, the counties will have a period of time to meet that new rule. It's just the assistance that we would provide and the outreach we would provide and that $500,000 that the legislature provided would not be there. We will be out there doing it, just not as accelerated or as aggressively as we would have in the past.
Okay, well, that is somewhat concerning then. Let's back up here and say, what is your timeline for getting the rules done?
Where they're,
Madam Chair, yeah, the draft rule will be completed by June 30th at the very latest, at which time the process begins through the ALJ and the hearings, and it will be a rather contentious rulemaking process, so it's probably going to take the full year or so to go through the ALJ process. The implementation after that will still be probably another 6 months to a year, so it is going to take some time for us to get them to the point where the counties will have to update their ordinances.
I wouldn't be so quick to say June 30th. I don't know that. I know they're in. I haven't reviewed any draft language as of this time yet. And if it's not on my calendar right now for that review, and that's a process that we go through internally. So as that process then continues, it will then be stepping into the public process. The legal public process, the ALJ administrative law process. That does take some time. So you are looking at a year plus, before those rules come into effect.
When the rules are completed, will the counties have a draft ordinance that they can use so that wheel does not have to be reinvented multiple times?
Madam Chair, we're building off of the foundation of the existing rules. So they already, this is part of the dialogue that we had last year. The counties are already dealing with existing state shoreline ordinances. Most of the counties over that period of time have been in a working relationship with the DNR in redeveloping their own. They are in constant review and editing of their shoreline rules. So they have become very familiar with this And so they'll be just dealing with a new standard and trying to figure out how it best works for them. I'm not thinking it's going to take as long as the first set took, 6 years. We're not expecting that type of development. I think many of the counties will begin, as that rule comes in, will likely, some will probably already be in compliance. Some will be in the process on their own. Many will need some assistance and time from us to help them through that process. So that, but we are we have some time before that we get to that junction.
You have the resources to give them that help?
Madam Chair, and that's part of the things that we're talking about in this watershed management approach. How shorelines and local units of government and the decisions they make, we are looking to put more energy into this arena, and that is in our new design part of the things that we are looking at, and how do we do that. So we have resources. We'll continue to do this work. But it's something you're going to want to monitor our success in this.
Okay.